I got to go to La Brea Tar Pits the other day.
I know.
Got a really nice tour, and we were being filmed, so it was a bit stressful, but I bought a cap from their gift shop, and I think it's my favourite thing in the world.
Do you wear it forwards or backwards?
Oh, forwards, yeah. No, I'm not having a midlife crisis yet, but I think it's on the horizon.
Do I look like I have a midlife crisis when I have
Do you wear your cap backwards?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I wear shorts and a skateboard.
Oh, no, you know, that's a choice.
And I look at fossils and I podcast and I play computer games. Am I? That
evens it out, I think. You know, there's plenty of respectable elder people that play video games. It's a medium for everyone to enjoy. And yeah, fossils, definitely. Yeah.
At what stage do I become, you know, like ironically cool?
Oh, dude, you've been ironically cool for a long time. Do not worry. And the fact that you don't recognize it is even cooler.
Is that what makes it cool?
Yeah, yeah. The second you recognize it, you're going to be intolerable and we'll no longer be friends.
I wish my favorite band, The Offspring, would make a song about this or something.
Are they good?
They're good. Yeah.
Are they as good as Aqua?
Were you being facetious? Have you really not heard of The Offspring? You've heard of it. Come on.
Well, sing a song for me. I might recognize it.
Another girly say, we fly for a white guy.
Yeah, okay. I did that one. DMCA.
I don't think I was in tune enough for the algorithm to figure out that I was.
No, that's the point. Yeah. This is gold, Dave. Pure gold.
Yeah, totally.
Should we talk about more about episode two?
We are talking about Dunkelosteus.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, welcome back, everyone.
That was a good introduction.
Episode 2.2 or something. And yeah, Dunkelosteus. Dunkel's bone, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is an enormous placoderm fish from the Devonian period. And it is probably, yeah, I mean, one of the most iconic fishes in the fossil record, just because of its sheer size, and it looks permanently angry because of its giant blades, like tooth-like blades, in its jaws. Absolutely phenomenal creature.
If you don't know what it looks like, that description sounds terrifying.
Yeah, I would not want to be in the water with it. Put it that way.
Yeah, so everyone just search for that online. Find the image. No, because you're all going to see it on Netflix.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the most, I think your listeners will know Dunkelosteus because it is such an icon. But yeah, if you don't search for it, it's magnificent.
So what were some of the design choices you made with Dunkelosteus? Did you have much input into this?
Yeah, so fishes is purportedly my specialist subject. So this felt comfortable compared to some of the other animals. But I mean, Dunkelosteus is one of those creatures that it is so hard to figure out because we just know it from the head, that really famous skull, which is absolutely terrifying. If you Google it, it really is terrifying. But the body is not there. We don't have that information. So reconstructing everything from the neck backwards is a real struggle. And there have been quite a few reconstructions of this thing over the years. And with every new reconstruction comes a new size estimate, new fin shapes, all of that kind of stuff. And really, it was the hydrodynamics that led a lot of the decisions about which body shape to go with. Because one thing that you see throughout history is that to move through a medium like water, you really do have to conform to some rules. And so the decisions we made were very much based on a lot of the literature that had a guess at what these things should look like, but also guided by some of the hydrodynamics. Was this creature able to live and move through water, which is a very thick fluid? You know, it needs a lot of surface area and finage to actually thrust itself through the water. And so Dunkelosteus is a challenge in that respect. It also highlights as well quite how rigorous our research was, because since the program has been finished, there's been another paper out that describes a different shape of Dunkelosteus. They looked at the orbit of it, of the thing, compared it to the neck, did some work to make it a lot shorter and compact. And this is a really good example of the latest paper isn't always the best one, because if you look at that new, it's been described on various social media as the chunky donkey. it's very contracted. It looks quite strange. So despite the fact that that's the latest paper out, I'm not entirely convinced that that's an accurate reconstruction, purely because the hydrodynamics of such a large animal moving it through the water just don't sit right with me. So this was nice to see, actually, that our design still fits, is really good, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the starting point. I mean, you've got the head, but the thing that matters most is just the laws of physics. You cannot escape those.
No. And you see it with, it's convergent evolution. It's that idea that if you want to fly, for example, having two limbs that you can flap at the side of your body, increasing the surface area, that's the way that you move through air. Likewise, if you're trying to move through water, having fins rather than fingers works, and having a streamlined body works, and having a torpedo-like shape works. So yeah, it was bearing that in mind, and also bearing in mind the reconstructions that were out there that really informed the shape. And I then went about this asset in a slightly different way, this model in a different way. Usually you start with a skeleton and build outwards, but with this animal, we started with the skin, with the body form of the thing, and worked inwards. So from a very, very early stage, we had a good idea about what this thing was shaping up to look like. And we had loads of input. The producer of the series, Gisla, was fantastic. He's a marine biologist as well, and he had a really good sense of what the hydrodynamics would be as well. We worked together with various scientists too, just to get that shape right. Various decisions like having skin on top of that bony skull, and having scars, just like sharks have scars around their gills, because that's how they mate. They grab each other in the gill area to mate. All of those little tweaks to make it look like a more real animal, an animal that's lived in that environment, all fed into the design.
Yeah. So what are some of the coolest details you were able to get into that scene, onto that model? Are the little bits and pieces that you just crafted, you sculpted with your knowledge of hydrodynamics, is there kind of like a little tip to a fin or something? Yeah. Some of those tiny details.
Yeah, I mean, it really, the devil is in the detail, absolutely. If you have a very general shape of a fish, it doesn't always look right. So having a tail that looks like a goldfish just doesn't suit Dunkleosteus. Having a tail that looks exactly like a shark, and placoderms are probably quite closely related to sharks, doesn't quite fit either. But things like having that tip to shed vortexes off the fins, all of that kind of stuff, absolutely crucial. And we worked quite hard to make it look right for the size of the animal, the length of the animal, that kind of thing. Imagining fluid flowing over the body and having a sense of what the fins should look like. As for my favorite detail, the scarring, I think, in that right place was great, really good. Having flesh around those tooth blades, because the temptation with all of these animals, whether it be dinosaurs or Dunkleosteus, is to have those teeth exposed and to show off possibly one of the most magnificent features of the animal. So to have a little bit of lip coverage, to have a little bit of flesh around those teeth, just like modern sharks do, like most modern animals do, was really important. So that kind of detail was really important, I think, to make it feel like a real animal. But it's also behavior as well. So we know that this animal is capable of very high bite forces. And we also know that it could probably open and close its mouth in milliseconds. You know, it was very powerful lever system that could open and close the mouth. So there is a little moment where it's approaching the ammonoid and it's dealing with it in its mouth, and it sort of snaps its mouth open for a second to suck it into its mouth. It's a suction feeder. So getting those little details in from biomechanical studies, it's a moment. You know, it's a few frames in the overall story, but it makes it so much more real. So I'm really glad that we had so much control and so much forgiveness from ILM that gave us that freedom to work with the animators and work with the artists who are designing this thing. There was a lot of feedback back and forth on this particular asset.
Right. Did your background in hydrodynamics just work with the Dunkleosteus, Or was it involved in all parts of the scene? Did you work on the hydrodynamics of the ammonoids and how they moved and how both interacted?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, probably our best analog for thing to look at to compare ammonoids with today are things like nautiloids, the nautilus that bobs around, and in having a different shaped shell and a slightly different design to that ammonoid shell. You have to bear in mind the physics of the thing. ILM are fantastic at working out what looks right, the physics look right. Half of the battle is making sure that the animal is embedded in that world. And in this case, that world is just water. So having the siphuncle blowing in the right direction and having the tentacles wafting in the right direction, giving those tentacles purpose when they needed to have them. Sorry, I shouldn't really be calling them tentacles. I should call them arms.
I was going to pick you up on that.
I'm so sorry, Dave. Making sure all of that was correct was really important. And a lot of people were involved in making sure that they were bobbing in the right way, knowing where the gas was in that shell, knowing where the midpoint was so that you could get the physics right, the center of gravity, all that kind of thing. A lot of work behind the scenes to get that right.
Did ILM take well to that brief? You know, you come into work, you're working at ILM, you've been busy doing some superhero film, you get told, right, we're going to work on a paleo documentary. You come in, you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to get T-Rex or get a raptor. You come in and someone's there going,
well, today we're going to work on the hydrodynamics of ammonoids.
So I don't speak like that, Dave. I'm gonna stop that right there. I don't speak like that. Not nearly as much nasally, but a little bit nasally. Fine. No. They're brilliant with it. They're so excited to be designing animals that they've never heard of before in some cases. So to work on Dunkelosteus and ammonoids and that kind of thing was a challenge and a conversation. And they are. I'm not insulting them here at all, but a lot of them are paleo nerds. You know, they are really into it. They are. More than me in some cases. They're super interested in the anatomy of these things, the fact files that me and you put together. They read those back and forth. You know, I mean, it really was an investment on their part that they were into it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think they really enjoyed it. I'm sure there were moments where we were saying, oh, the siphuncle needs to move slightly left and that kind of thing, where like, oh God, I spent hours animating that. I need to redo it. But it was always the case that they were happy to do that because they recognized that there's a certain physics that needs to be gotten right to make the animal look believable in the environment. So quite honestly, I think they quite enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay. What was the importance of jaws for vertebrate evolution?
This was a really significant moment because until that point, the fishes had been taking food into their mouths. And they could either filter it out or they could, you know, maybe squash it a little bit with the muscles in their mouths. But to have an actual bear trap, to have an actual solid lever system, to have a crushing apparatus in the mouth was really important for processing harder food. And this is in a time where, you know, you've got prey that is starting to armor itself too. It's that they're starting to up their defenses. It was fine when there were just worms and that kind of thing that predators were eating. That's fine. It's all mushy stuff. But when you start to get shells involved, there's a bit more force that's required. And those muscles attached to a hard, a bear trap, essentially, is super important for them to feed efficiently. And I think one thing we do really nicely in the series here is that we demonstrate that jaws are not just for feeding. They can, once they've evolved, they can be used for all sorts of things. We show a mouth brooding fish that's quite cute, and it's because of jaws and the ability to really close your mouth firm that they can protect their offspring. And of course, you know, jaws are used in nature by all sorts of animals in all sorts of weird and wonderful ways. So a really pivotal moment in evolution.
We're using our jaws right now.
We are speaking with our jaws, absolutely, yeah.
Well, Tom, would you be happy to come back for the introduction to episode 3?
Yes, it would be my absolute pleasure.